Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. Well, after our tough political discussion in the first hour of Sunday Night Tonight, I should declare it's party time. It's our old and broken way of saying hooray, hooray to Keith Garner and the folk at Wesley Mission, because today, well, this week marks the beginning of a week of celebrations for the 200th anniversary of Wesley Mission. See, you must be one of the first voluntary associations in Australia to celebrate a 200th anniversary.
Yeah, we're tracing our roots in Sydney back to a small group of people who met at the Rocks and were the first real Methodist community that met in Sydney. There's also a group, you know, you get in all kinds of arguments, you know, when you get talking about history. There's a small group that met near Windsor also, and then there was a group at Castlereagh later. But it is a very, very long way back.
But all around the same year.
Yeah, all about the same time, yeah. And 2012 marks 200 years since they first met.
1812.
Yeah. And they wrote a letter to the UK saying we want somebody to come over here and help us to help.
Tchaikovsky didn't write an overture for you.
No, but it was certainly something that was a real big. It's an important thing for us, really. We do think it's important history to look back and to say this is the beginning. So next Sunday we got some big things happening.
Well, tell us a little bit. Well, now, before we go into what the big things are, just give us a couple of the names that have been associated with Wesley Sydney over the years. I mean, we can recall people who have put Wesley always, it seems, in the front of civic life in Sydney.
Yeah, look, it's always been important. I mean, I think that's always been the case. Samuel Lee was the first missionary, Methodist missionary here. W.G. Taylor was the one who really coined in the 19th century the style of mission that was to become a central mission, where word and deed, you know, the offering of the gospel and compassionate work really began. And he began in Old York Street and eventually Centenary Hall, which led to the mission. Frank Raywood during the years that were so challenging. Alan Walker's appearance in Sydney really marked a new change in the way that we did things.
Sir Alan Walker, in a post-war leadership role, was an amazing career, because from those post-war years he kept going right through up until the 1970s, even the 1980s. He was still a very active figure in church circles around Australia, and a significant role internationally as well.
Yeah, and I think an important time too. I mean, I think that the story of Wesley Mission is marked out not just by individuals, but the time in which they ministered, if you like. And Alan Walker was here when the all-white policy and when the Vietnam War and all those things were there. Gordon Moyse followed him.
Another equally dominant figure in the Sydney landscape.
Yeah, sure. And these people are all different, and, you know, I think that's part of the trick. However, they were all convinced that Wesley Mission was not just a local church. It had to live on a bigger map than the local church. It had to speak into issues and out of issues, and was prepared to nail the colours, as it were, of the gospel against issues when it was necessary. And that doesn't always make you popular.
No, and it involves really being very careful about both areas. That is, you've got to make sure that if your feet are on the ground, they're on the ground in a relevant way, so that when you do talk politics and policy, you're speaking out of experience.
Sure, and I think that the fact that Wesley Mission's story is bound up with being alongside those who are hurting, speaking for the marginalised, because it's those things, and because that's also because we believe in the gospel of Jesus Christ, that makes it possible to make that stand and to do it with a kind of confidence.
You tended to avoid, too, something that some churches have sort of perennially tended to slip in, and that is to finger wagging.
Well, we've tried not to do that, really. There's plenty of people do that, isn't there? And if you wag the finger, there's always three and a thumb pointing back. So what's the point and purpose in that, really, you know? And I think that really it's easy to do that. What's not easy to do is to really strike at the heart of an issue and say, this is what it's all about. And I think we stand in the John Wesley tradition in that sense.
Well, you've certainly kept it up. Only last Thursday, you were quoted in that august journal, The Australian, in the editorial pages, no less.
Yes, it's about homelessness, isn't it? Yes. Well, simply because I think there's a lot of talk about homelessness. Now, I think that there really is no solution to homelessness unless it's a joined-up solution. And I think it's too easy to rag and bag people from the past to say, you know, Kevin Rudd didn't meet his targets, you know, Julia Gillard isn't meeting her targets. In our own state here, we're not meeting. It's too easy to do that. What we really need to do is to say, if this is going to work, if we're really going to do something for some of the people who are homeless. And I've just driven into the ABC tonight through the city, and you know, the city's waking up for many people at this time, but it's a cold night tonight, and there still are people that sleep on the streets. And not only those who sleep on the streets, but those who move from home to home and don't have any permanence of accommodation. We really do have to intervene very early to help
something
these people.
Something that the richest and best cities, the biggest cities in the world, have not come to terms with. Wherever you are, you could go to London, to Manchester, these are rich cities like Melbourne and Sydney and Perth, and you find it.
Sure, you find it in New York, Washington, all over the world. That is true, but we can do more. And really, I don't think we should sleep in our beds calm until we've actually really addressed these issues in the very best ways. We can do more.
We'll come back to an issue or two later, but just briefly, tell us what sort of celebrations you've got lined up this
week.
Well,
we're going to make sure that these 3 years are celebrated. We're not going to drive people to distraction with it all, but next Sunday we're having a march through the city. It begins in Martin Place with drama. We have drama. Barry O'Farrell, the Premier of New South Wales, is coming. Tanya Plibersek, representing Commonwealth, is coming. Because of our interest in health and care. And it's going to be an amazing occasion. We've taken the State Theatre. You say, why have we taken the State Theatre? And that's because for many months, Wesley Mission worshipped at the State Theatre, because when Alan was a superintendent here, the Lyceum burnt down. And within hours of it burning down, the State Theatre's management has come along and said, you know, we want you to be able to use our theatre for your worship. And so hall's just over 2,000, and we'll have it full next Sunday for a very special act of worship, and more than an act of worship, but really a call to a new beginning.
Where's your street procession going to and
from? From Martin Place right to the State Theatre.
What time at Martin Place?
2:15.
So if you're in Sydney next Sunday, looking for a little amusement in the glorious sunshine, 2:15 at Martin Place.
Yeah,
and a big march down.
And get this, the Salvation Army band are going to march ahead of us just to create a bit of fuss.
Well, actually, a good Methodist children, really, aren't
they? Yeah, absolutely. We always remind them they're Methodists. Yes.
Let's talk then about the issues you're still dealing with and the particular one you're concerned about this week.
Look, what we're concerned about really is, we've talked before, John, you and I, about mental health. But one of the recent research...
And the link to homelessness, of course.
Sure. But one of the things that we've been looking at is the people who care for people with mental health issues. And we found, in fact, there are some very serious issues out there for people who are carers. And that many, many carers care for a long time, 5, 10, 15 years. And some carers are very young. Now, in these cases, whole lives are being affected. So mental health becomes not just an issue that we want to talk about out there, but it becomes an issue that we have to talk about, because there are many, many people who are being not only affected by mental health in their own lives, firstly, but because somebody else they're caring for, they too have become vulnerable for the very same things.
And how do you see your role here? Where are you sort of intervening practically, and what are you speaking to? Are you talking?
Yeah, we're doing this practically, but we're actually saying that we really believe that in the medical profession, at governmental level, there are a number of things that we can do. And one of the things that we can do is, first of all, we can make it easy for people accessing mental health care by making sure that there's a one point of entry. You know what happens when people have illnesses? They come along and they fill the form in, and then you go somewhere else for some further. We start a over again. When people tell their story, they want to tell it once, they want to tell it clearly. That's one of the practical things we can do. And secondly, when we're dealing with somebody with mental health issues, we can start to naturally ask the question, who are the carers? Who are the other people involved in this situation? Because we've found that very many young people are caring for parents, and it can have all kinds of knock-on effects. Truancy at school, it can have the effects of people not actually finding themselves able to get involved in life. And when you're dealing with mental health, you don't talk about it. So you're very likely not to be explaining why it is you're late at school, why it is that you're involved. So we're asking those kind of questions and wanting a debate around some of those issues.
For some people too, and I guess this is where the church becomes a valuable aid, they may be aware that they have a mental problem, but it's not something that they show in their normal daily life, but something they wrestle with deeply in private. Church is somewhere sometimes that people can first be brave enough to venture, look, I'm struggling with certain things.
True, John.
Are there counselling services that...
Yes, there are. I think that Ian Hickey was one of the people who made the observation just a couple of years ago that very often a mental health issue might appear when a person is beyond the age of 40, but it might well have been there for 20 years prior to the moment when there's an acknowledgement of it. Mm. Now, that being the case, I think we need to really be open to understanding that some of those issues are among us now. And having the kind of community that is not only supportive and not only engaging, but allows people to actually share from their vulnerability, is, I think, one thing that the Christian church, above all, ought to be the community that does that.
Well, it's something about, and we've spoken on this before, this loss of voluntary associations in our society means that the avenues for people to make connections with other human beings, let alone other human beings who can be of direct help for them, are collapsing at such a rate in our society that the churches remain one of those few suburban centres where people can actually go and find a point where help may be accessible.
And yes, that's true, and yet we have to be prepared to do that. Sometimes in our churches we look after ourselves, and we're perhaps not aware that maybe we have to put up with behaviour that doesn't always feel very nice and suburban. I've just come from a mission service tonight, and I know we probably had a couple of dozen people in that congregation that really wouldn't find their way into many churches. But the reason they come is because probably we ignore certain things and we allow them to be who they are. And I think we've got to learn to do that more and more and more. And also to say that we provide a supportive culture that says in this place, it's okay, you can just be. And I'm not saying that any kind of behaviour goes, but certainly we need to be prepared, I think, to realise that people are in that situation. You know, 53% of people in some recent research actually know themselves to be facing a mental health issue in their lives. And really, it's something like 80% that are going to, at some point in their lives, face some kind of challenge.
And most people's reaction would be, I've got to wrestle with this personally and private. I can't afford to expose the fact that I have a mental weakness or instability, because that will destroy my life publicly.
Yeah, but one of the good things that's happened in recent years is some of these public figures coming out and saying they're facing those challenges. I think it's serious enough that we can't deal with it on our own. It's that serious. It can't be dealt with on our own. It needs a whole of community response.
Keith Garner, it's great to have you with us as usual. We do wish you a fabulous week.
I hope our music's a little bit better next week than the introduction of the celebration.
Our ragged birthday anthem.
No, I appreciated it very, very much, and it'll go home ringing in my ears tonight.
Keith Garner, the Reverend Keith Garner, Superintendent. What a wonderful name. Superintendent of Wesley Mission in Sydney. It's been great to have you with us, and we'll look forward to a celebration next week, and we'll have you in again a few weeks' time to tell us all about it. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.